Contracts, salary caps. Why do our favorite teams make some of the moves they do? It's usually the money. It's time for the Business of Sports with Andrew Brandt.
Hey, boys and girls, good to have you back. I got a special guest, my friend, someone I admire professionally and personally, Thomas Dimitroff. He's with me today to talk about the Matt Ryan contract setting a new standard in the NFL. I always have agents talk about how great a job they did on these contracts, and that would certainly be the case, I'm sure, if Tom Condon came on, but he's been on about Matt Stafford and Sam Bradford, other contracts. But I want to hear from the team side. So Thomas Dimitroff, the general manager of the Falcons, is with me today. But more importantly, Thomas, tell me about your fitness. You just did a century ride, did you, last week?
We just did a century. I was helping to co-chair an event for Grady Hospital, one of our main hospitals here in town. It was a great event. It was our inaugural event. We ended up pulling 1,000 riders, which is great. And I'm really excited about it emerging into something really big in the years to come. Long story short, however, it was coming off of a really long draft preparation and then substantial negotiation with Matt Ryan and his representatives. And suffice it to say, I had little mileage in my legs, and I was thinking, how in the heck am I going to get on my bike and ride 100 miles? Well, the day before, we did a VIP event up here in Flowery Branch, and we all rode just close to 50 miles, and then we turned around the next day and I had to do this 100-mile ride. So what I learned very quickly, and I know it well, but it reminded me to get in that Peloton, get right in the, maybe the third or fourth row and tuck in there and just mash. And it's funny. It was great. I had a great time. We probably pulled in that 100-mile ride right around 4 hours and 55 minutes, which is that's a strong pace. It's a 21, 22
pace.
Oh,
yeah. Yeah.
So you know that it was strong. Well, here's what was really interesting. I will admit it on all of this this coverage that you have here, that we call it the hand of God. Every once in a while, that 5 second hand hits you on the lower back, right, when you're riding in these Peloton with all these like big time riders, and I'm just smiling, and they're like, I had a couple ex pros there, and like, Thomas, you don't smile when you get the hand of God. You just pretend like it's not even affecting you. You keep moving forward. So, long and short of it, we had a great ride, a great turnout, and I was just happy to jumpstart myself back into the fitness level that I'm hoping to be in for the rest of the summer and into the fall.
Yeah, you talked about not getting a lot of miles in, and you asked me before we came on about my workout this morning. I did a tempo run today. For people that don't know, that's kind of going as hard or pretty much as hard as you can for about 20 minutes, and I was kind of cooked after 2 miles. I can do 2 miles on a tempo run in about a little under 14. So I had to walk a little bit to finish out the 20 minutes. But, the mileage, you and I have talked about sort of work-life balance. You just said you came off draft prep and Matt's contract, kind of the bigger issues for front offices right in your wheelhouse this past few weeks. How have you been able to keep the work-life balance and especially the fitness level?
Well, that's been interesting. And I can look all the way back to the Super Bowl year when we came up short. So you're really digging after a season like that, mm-hmm. right? And then you go through all of last season to where we got to. It feels like it really hasn't stopped. Now, teams like, interestingly enough, like the Patriots, they're used to doing it that way, right?
Right.
I think teams who get in and they're plugging away hard and they're really focused. And Dan Quinn is awesome. He's really high energy and very focused. So there's not a whole bunch of stopping in this building. So I think it's really important for me to remind all of the football ops people outside of the coaching staff and the players when, they're starting to kick up their practices right now. I'm trying to make sure that everyone like Nick Polk, who and Scott
yep.
Pioli and a number of other people within our organization, you all need to take some deep breaths as I do. And I really believe this, that I need to set the tone that way. If I'm maniacally moving around the building, trying to land the 87th player on the roster as a general manager, I don't think that's the smart leadership. So I've thought a lot about it, quite honestly. Every year that I'm involved with this and at this level, I think about it, and I'm going into my 11th season now. This was my 11th draft in this seat. And sometimes I kind of shake myself a little bit, wonder like, wow, it's one of those things that is so important to keep balance. And a recent addition to our staff here was who comes from West Point, who I'm hiring in the relatively near future to help with a lot of different strategic initiatives. He's reminded me and introduced a new word into my sort of balance vocabulary, and it's rhythm. Mm. And I think the balance and the rhythm with my life and the rhythm within the organization is going to set a really good tone so that we're operating at high energy when we need to, but also have the rhythm of coming down and settling in the right spots where it's not being perceived as just, wasting time and not being gritty and work ethic driven.
Yeah, and so much of the NFL, as I know, that there seems to be this kind of maniacal, we've got to watch more film than the other guys, we've got to work harder than the other guys. And, there aren't a lot of you and I and sort of the Tony Dungy mentality of balance, and you're not going to get an edge missing out on sleep and fitness and nutrition and diet. But maybe that is coming around. It's been a while since I was in the league, and obviously you're a shining example of it. Do you sense that at all?
Oh, Andrew, I think if you were to venture back into the league, I think you would be in a really positive, happy spot from that standpoint, because I've been looking at it for many, many years, and I've known that I was, and I say this humbly, anomalous in the sense of there were a lot of people that were interested in it, but either they did it underneath the covers, so to speak. Like, they were doing things that they didn't want people to know about, i.e. fitness, and they would step out and they would come back and feel guilty about coming back into their office after having showered at 1:30 in the afternoon or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. And I'm a firm believer in, like, look, we all get our workouts done when we get them done. Everyone needs to know what the priorities are during a week or during a day. That's important, but we have to have the freedom to be able to operate along our schedules for the most part. So I think it's great. I think Dan Quinn sets a really good example for our coaching staff and our players. And I think this building in general has a really good understanding. We have a great cafe downstairs. People can juice every day, every hour of the day if they want to. They don't have to eat crappy food.
Right.
And we're very, very mindful, I think. So I think if you went back into most organizations, you would realize there is such a cognizance of fitness and eating well, much more than there ever used to be. Honestly, we used to say when we'd bring those young guys in, Andrew, we'd say, I don't know if these guys are going to have the palate to eat, baked fish. And we're thinking all it would be was fried stuff and big hamburgers. And that's completely changed. It is. I love seeing it. I love seeing the evolution of this league.
I do too. It's great to hear. There was one spot in Green Bay. We didn't get that food at the facility at Lambeau's, but there was one spot called the Urban Frog downtown Green Bay. Yes, there is a downtown Green Bay. And I go there every lunch, and me, I think Aaron Rodgers, and a few other guys kept that place in business, and I was so bummed to find out that was not enough. They closed a couple years ago, but it's coming around most places, as you said. Can you give us listeners an insight into your schedule? Because I would think, like me, you're kind of a creature of routine. So
I am.
What is your morning like? What is your morning? What is your fitness like? Do you always try to get it in before work? Take us through a typical day in the life.
Yeah, it honestly depends on the time of season, of course. And I've like you probably, even though I am a creature of routine and habit, I'm always dabbling to try to see and adapt to see where things are a little bit better for me, especially as I age in this business. And I turned 51 a few months ago, and I'm thinking, my God, that's just amazing how that's flown by.
Yeah.
And I realize how important it is, as you do, so there are certain days that I will get up very early. It could be 5:15 and ride, do a really good hour and a half ride around my neighborhood. I'll throw on the light system. And, it's, I know some people think it's not safe, but quite honestly, in Atlanta, given the traffic, it's probably one of the most peaceful times and the safest times,
because I would think, yeah.
You can get out on the roads and you can spin out really well. So I'll do that. I have a heavy bag set up at home with a really cool sort of, like karate studio for my son. And I'll do a little bit of bag work, and I've been a real push-up person. Like, I love the push-ups. We had the Navy SEAL people that we have in here regularly come in, and they started pontificating about the importance of push-ups and body weight workouts. And it's funny, guys like you and I will look at all those big burly guys sometimes here. And when we were younger, we used to idolize them thinking, man, if I could only be that big. And now we all want to be 165, 75 or 85 and kind of ripped up and doing body weight workout.
Right.
You see some of these big guys and they're struggling. And I'm, I like that I'm actually thriving in that area. So I've been spending a lot more time doing a lot of different routines with that. And then some pull-ups and chin-ups. Those are challenging, as you know, but I mean, keeping the body weight thing is very important to me. And then I will come in and, you know, I'll do start my work day. It depends on where I am again during the season, but I'll be very, very, very diligent during, you know, most of all the way through to maybe 1 o'clock. And honestly, again, I'll need to get something in, whether that's going down on a tread or getting on some Stairmaster action, or even, you know, sometimes taking, you know, the multi walks around our facility here, which is big and gives us some good chances to get outside and just to keep myself going is really important. Another thing that very quickly that I've been dabbling, and I used to do this, and I know some people, I really believe nutrition is very mm-hmm. personal, right? Along with my fitness program, lately I've really dug back into where I was many years ago on regular fasting. And I say fasting, not with my body type, it's really difficult to fast for mm-hmm. 5 and 6 days, right? I'll fall off the edge. But what I've always found really good for me is on a Sunday night will be my last meal, and then I won't eat until Monday night at dinner time. So it gives me a nice stretch of, you know, sort of putting, you know, taking a little bit of stress off my eliminative organs and making sure that I feel like I'm right. flushing. So I'll drink organic teas and I'll drink water during that time. And then, you know, look, by the end of the day, I am usually a little edgy and agitated, but I'm ready to eat at 6 o'clock. And it's given me a nice, it's just given me a nice sort of weekly cleanse. And I've really enjoyed doing that.
And I think that's really important. I'm a little more in terms of the fasting, kind of the intermittent. And I know you and I listen to people like Tim Ferriss and Joe Rogan, and we hear that a lot. Basically, just try to even get a workout in with just water. And then I'll eat between, say, 10-ish and maybe 11, 12, and 6, 7 p.m. And that'll be the only times a day I'll eat. And I'll try to do that, I don't know, 2 or 3 days a week if I can. Just where, you know, you're eating normal, but you're trying to keep that window to about 8 hours, 8, 9 hours.
That's exactly what I've been feeling lately. And I feel like it's so easy to just eat and eat and eat. And I know that. I understand grazing. I understand some people think, you know, you eat like breakfast like a king and dinner like a pauper. Yeah. I think it's all personal, don't you? Like,
right,
the more
right.
I'm into this, like I honestly really enjoy getting up in the morning, even if I'm not on that fasting day. I really enjoy not eating until noon. So I'll get a nice workout in, I'll flush my body, and by noon I'm ready to eat. I feel good. I haven't been ingesting all morning, which can happen when you're at these kind of facilities, right?
Right.
You have great French toast, you have pancakes right. and eggs, and you have smoothies, and you think you're eating well, and then you've taken in about 2,000 calories, right? So it's just a really interesting thing. And back to rhythm and balance, I think being able to strike that cool midline is so important for me.
Yeah, it's funny because one thing, you and I are a little different. I don't miss a lot about the NFL. One thing I do miss is the training, the weight room, and the strength and conditioning coaches, especially the assistant at that time, now the head coach over at Green Bay, Tom Lavott, put me on some programs and really got my fitness going. And, you know, what I would do, you talked about the tread and the, I would go in there as soon as practice started. So that was the clear time where there was nobody in there. And I knew that if we were getting close to the end of practice, the rumble, the cavalry was on the way. So I'd get out of, I'd hump out of there as soon as I could. But that was my window. I'm like, okay, they're going to practice. And because early wouldn't work for me with my little kids and late wouldn't work. So I'd use that practice time. It was great.
Well, Andrew, what I would say also is, I've been having some amazing connections with different other different pro athletes, and usually they're cycling related. Like I've really, really hooked into the pro cycling scene. Of course, you know, of my relationship with Lance Armstrong, and we get along really well. And through him, I've met, actually through, George Hincapie and Christian Vandeveld and Bobby Julich, a lot of those pro racers that are all in the southeastern area. And then obviously Lance is out in Austin and in Aspen. Developed a really good circle, and then I'm meeting other people from around the world who have fitness as their drive, and it is really motivating to think about how we can implement a lot of that really interesting intel, not only for myself, but into our athletic performance model, which where we are with the league right now. If you would go back in now and compare it to where you were when you were with the pack and you were training with them, you'd be amazed how open-minded a lot of these organizations are. They know that the whole element of not only recruiting on free agent side, it is a big thing when these players are coming in thinking that you're going to extend their careers, right?
Longevity.
Body, mind, and soul. Longevity, for sure. And so it's not just hokey. There is some cool science to it, of course, some great science to us. But if you're convincing some of these young guys and some of the older guys, quite honestly, and some of the coaches, I think they thrive. Just like you said at the very beginning, knowing where your mind is and you're not taking away your time, you have to be fresh, you have to be sharp, and that has a lot to do with your fitness and your nutrition and such.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, I have heard even the strength training, you know, back in the day, it was kind of the East German, Russian hard lifting, deadlifts, and I think a lot of that has shifted to core. I mean, you can be as strong as an ox going straight if you're blocking a guy straight ahead of you, but you got to move. You know, you need core strength, you need agility, you need functional strength. So I think that's all changed as well.
Well, you're exactly right, and I know you want to get on to some other stuff.
No,
have you watched the movie Icarus?
I have. Brian Fogel, yeah, and I we've sort of back and forth. He may be on this podcast soon. Yeah,
I can't wait to hear it. It was outrageous, and I was just with Tim Johnson, another pro cyclist, this weekend, and he knows him well. And Tim was riding in this event, and we had this long discussion about, you know, just about that cycling and about, you know, where it was with PEDs and cycling and how we all know it was crazy forever. Every once in a while you get someone who's willing to stand up to it, which is outrageous and admirable beyond, of course.
Yeah. And before we get to Matt Ryan, one more thing about the fitness is that, you know, you mentioned Lance, what's just clear to me, I listen to his podcast and it's amazing the level of accomplishment that some of the people he has on who are serious cyclists like yourself. He had the CEO of Sam's Club last week, I think, or the week before, who, you know, one of the top executives in the country, and this guy's doing Century Rise, he's doing Leadville, and he's up and down the hills of Austin with Lance, and you're thinking, man, you know, you and I just talked about this, one of the most demanding jobs in the country, and this guy's killing it on the bike. So there's an answer to everything we talked about. You don't have to be maniacal about your hours to achieve. To me, the greatest strengths people have are always self-motivation, self-discipline, just trying to get better every day. And you mentioned Lance, just hearing the people on his pod, that's what's going on.
Well, yeah, that was a really cool podcast with the Sam's Club CEO, and I really enjoyed it as well. I will say, again, looking back here and just maybe to tie this together, I feel really good with our sport and how it's evolving. Even, you know, guys like Dan, we have everything is revolving around competition within our building with the players, of course. But it's also happening with our coaches and reminders of like, hey, you know, there's no like anyone worried about being offended if they're not in shape. Like there's a reminder by everyone, like, let's go, let's keep it on, let's set a good example. Of course, not everyone's going to look svelte 120 pounds or whatever the heck it is. I'm not even saying that's healthy, but I just think there's a really good energy that's in our organizations now much more than it used to be. And I'm really excited about it.
Yeah. And speaking of energy in your organization, you have got your best player, your franchise quarterback, face of your franchise under contract now, another 5 years, I believe. And You know, take me inside that before we get to numbers and comps and all that. Just sort of this was something you kind of knew you were going to do when the season ended, and how much went on before the draft, and I would assume it kind of focused in right after the draft. So take us inside that whatever way you can.
Yeah, I think what's interesting for everyone to understand too, you know, your listeners, is that, you know, we've always been very mindful of trying to sign back, you know, the guys that we've invested a lot in, of course, and guys that we've believed in from the very beginning. Matt was the first draft pick I was ever involved with here as a general manager in this league. Very proud of how he's evolved as a player and as a person and as a leader. We've talked about that in past podcasts. Mm-hmm. He is really what we are looking for in so many ways. And, you know, we had talked about how we were going to approach it. We have normally not done guys, Julio included, until that last year, right? We're not big in doing it in 3 years or 2 years. Normally we've been a year out, and it's been that way with our main guys. So it's sent a message to even guys that are more midline players who are looking for a contract. Like, look, if Matt and Julio and a couple other guys, even Roddy White during those times, have done it this way, it sets a tone of consistency. And I think that's been good for us. And so we had gone into this whole thing with Matt thinking we were going to wait until after this season and we were going to talk about really honing in and trying to get this done. We thought about potentially getting it done before free agency just because we didn't want all the sort of the banter and all the suggestion and intuition, et cetera, or insinuation, excuse me, et cetera, et cetera. And I think as we started getting closer and closer to free agency, and it went by, and we had met with Tom Kahn, and we, again, have a very good relationship with Tom in a lot of ways. So we're very communicative. We realized in the end that I know they were waiting to see what was going to go on with Kirk Cousins, right? That was a big thing.
Right.
Coming off what Garoppolo did and what San Fran did with him, who was a fine up-and-coming quarterback, however, 6 games.
Right.
And, you know, I think, you know, Aaron Rodgers, as you know Aaron well, I mean, I saw Aaron, interestingly enough, at the Super Bowl in the airport in a FBO, and he just said to me, we don't know each other that well. He said, just get this deal done with Matt first so I can get on with my life.
Right.
And I knew right then, I thought that was a good thing because that's all we needed for Aaron to go first and try to navigate through all this. We knew that wasn't going to be the case. So long after we got into free agency and we started talking back and forth and discussing within the building and outside the building, i.e. with his representation, that we just decided we were going to make a really strong move after the draft is when we were really focused on trying to put this together. And honestly, that's what happened. Tom, Todd France, as well as Jay Neenberg, all guys you know well, myself, Nick Polk, and Chase Falavine, sat in Arthur's beautiful family office, and we just started hammering it out for hours upon hours, and it worked out very well for both teams.
So I don't want to get too inside football, and I know you have some limitations, some confidentiality, but when you're negotiating, you just mentioned some comps. Obviously, the Cousins deal sets a new standard in terms of a fully guaranteed deal, but again, it's a limited time frame. Was that ever a discussion, I would think more from their side than yours, because you want all the years, in terms of going short a 3-year fully guaranteed rather than 3 years guaranteed plus plus? Did the length ever become an issue?
Yeah. You know, and you know this very well. You were very adept at what you did in this league and with a great reputation and an intelligent reputation. I think we knocked around all different approaches, and we spent a lot of time and worked at so many different levels. We brought Arthur in, you know, for discussion points, of course. I mean, out of respect, of course, he wants us to do our job, but I've always been very mindful of making sure that he was very much privy. So when we're about ready to sign a contract for $30 million and $100 million guaranteed or whatever has been reported, you know, that's one of those things that, you know, I want to make sure that he's very understanding of our approach to everything. So we had a lot of discussions about it, Andrew. We had thought about different things, and in the end, our feeling was to do something with a 5-year extension and a 6-year total was what was best for us.
And when you talk about, you know, doing something and the big numbers, I guess the question becomes from, you know, I'm kind of putting myself in Tom and Todd's shoes. They're basically saying to you, of course, we're going to jump the number, whatever that Garoppolo Cousins number, 28 plus. But they're probably saying, hey, listen, guys, whatever you do for us, you mentioned Aaron, Aaron's going to pass us in a month, a year, whatever it is. So you probably were sort of dealing with those parameters. I mean, comps are always a part of these deals, and I know it's in the quarterback market, the comps are the highest of any position. So how much of that and how much was kind of unique and endemic just to Matt Ryan?
Well, there's no question we were using comps and we were back and forth. And, you know, let's face it, within the quiet confines of the room, we're both going to have points and counterpoints about, you know, why, you know, Matt's deal on their side should be much further away from Kirk Cousins, with all due respect to him, mm-hmm. and Jimmy Garoppolo. And we would suggest, like, okay, here are the percentages over, you know, over many years of quarterbacks, and why should it be any more of this percent increase than that? And then we would get, you know, have discussions, of course, about percentages of the cap, which, as you know, I think I've heard you talk about, or there's been a lot of talk
right.
about that, you know,
right.
over the years. What was 16.5%, you know, years ago, and what 16.5% today is very different.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, obviously, it's huge.
Right.
And so there's just a lot of really interesting dialogue. I thought it was all, you know, it was all good. It was all, you know, I thought we were very respectful. No one was raising their voices. That wasn't the forum for this negotiation at all. And quite honestly, I'm not a big fan of that approach.
Right.
I have very little patience for, acrimony within negotiation. Of course, I understand when things go off, I understand people getting upset and, you know, folding their books and leaving. I do understand
yeah.
that at times, but as far as the anger and the agitation and trying to intimidate, that's not this world. You and I know that. Maybe that was days of yore, but it's not today.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting, this sort of percentage of cap, and over the years, I'm not proud of this, but I gave out the first $100 million contract in the NFL, and that was to Brett Favre. So 10 years, 100, 10 million average in 2001. So here we are, 2018, 30 million average. So we're probably talking a million point two-ish a year increase in terms of average
right.
for the top quarterback. And that doesn't sound like a lot, you know, for the best player on the team in the best position. So I do push back at people that sort of say, well, you know, I mean, they're just going crazy, these numbers for quarterbacks. Well, they probably said that about Brett's deal when he was making 10
sure
million.
Sure they did.
Yeah, in 2001.
Yes,
right.
Yes. That's
so
right.
I also want to know if you want to, I'll let you talk, if you want to push back on this notion, which frankly I've pushed back on, that a team with a Matt Ryan, with an Aaron Rodgers, with an Andrew Luck, with a Jimmy Garoppolo can't build a championship roster around them because of the money they're paying the quarterback.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Vehemently opposed to that opinion. I am 100% in of the mindset that you can. If you're strategic with it and
mm-hmm.
you're very creative with how you put it together, all within the confines of the rules, of course, I think we've done a really thoughtful job over the years. Again, Nick Polk has done a heck of a job being an advisor for me on so many levels,
mm-hmm.
You know, which has been good. Arthur's been so generous as an owner. Dan and I have a very communicative and very clear cut and decisive approach to how we want to approach things together. So he's very understanding as a head coach, not only to understand the here and now, which is important, but to also understand that, okay, by doing Matt Ryan at these numbers, next year is not going to be, you know, easy. We're going to have to be mindful of next year, and we're going to have to be mindful of the players on our team who are making X amount of dollars as well. It all is contingent on so many different things. So I think you can truly build a really good, strong, powerful, I wouldn't say star-studded, but, you know, it's all in the eyes mm-hmm. of the beholder, right? A very good, accomplished football team, and still have a very high-paid quarterback as we do. And I feel like we are well in line to do that. We're going to have to make some tough decisions. We made some tough decisions this year, and we know in years to come we will. But that's up to us to make those hard decisions, right, Andrew, to decide,
yeah.
All right, these are the people that we must have, and some of these players are players that will, you know, go on to greener pastures and other organizations, and it will be good for them as well.
Yeah, and I just think that you know, it's not the 20 plus million you're paying the quarterback that can get you into cap trouble. It's all the extra stuff I talk about sometimes on the podcast with the cap proration and the reproration and the stacked proration. And, you know, teams will have players that make 20 million, but they're counting 30 million because of all the stuff that's in the contract. Mm-hmm. So that's the cap management part of it. The other part of it that balances your cap, as you know so well, and you guys do a great job, is the scouting. Because you have half to 50, 60, 70% of your roster on rookie contracts because of good scouting and good drafting, then you're golden. You can pay your top 10 market rate. So scouting is such a big part of it.
Oh, yeah. You know, you know that you were around a very good group up there in Green Bay, as you mentioned before. And I feel very strongly about who we have here and how we're approaching our scouting department and our scouting approach. No question about that. And what's really great is you combine that with a head coach like Dan Quinn, and I'll do my lauding now. Yeah. Dan is so aware of all of this and so understanding about playing our youthful talent. That is music to a general manager, of course, right?
Yes.
So if we've all seen coaches who are amazing coaches in this league who have a real hesitation to play the young talent, and what they do is they may bring them in, we may draft them early, use legitimate draft picks on players. They may not even think about starting them until the middle of the first season. So that's six games in. And if in six games in, they decide, well, maybe he's not really ready. So then we come around to the second year. In the second year, he stubs his toe, literally, figuratively speaking. And then he's another half into the second season. Before you know it, you're staring down the barrel in the third season like, I don't know if this guy's really as good as we thought he was. When you play your players early and you get them on the field and you take some of your knocks, but you have the confidence in your coaching staff and the confidence in the youth to play in a system that isn't overly complicated and that you let the athletes be the athletes they are, you have a really good chance of doing what you said earlier in this conversation, and that is being smart about playing young guys who are lower contract guys while you're paying your big guys. And it's cyclical, right? So I think we luckily have a head coach who's very open to playing young guys.
Yeah, it's so key. I mean, when we interviewed coaches, we were deciding, I think at that time, between Mike McCarthy and Sean Payton, two good ones. But it was very clear, you know, it's you're going to play young players. And they were all in. You know, that's the way to do it. I don't want to keep you too long. I know our time is limited. You know, and I don't want to bring this up in a negative way, but after the disappointment of 2 years ago, I was at the game this year in Philly, and it was just, I just felt for you because, you know, at the end of the first half, I saw the Foles pass go right off your guys' shoulder pads that led to us into their hands, led to a score at the end of the half. And then, of course, I saw the pass go through Julio's hands at the end. So, again, another sting, but I'm sure that's motivating.
Well, those are – no, I never have an issue talking about it because I think we can all learn from it. We learned from, you know, the Super Bowl run, and then last year, I mean, to sit there and be, you know, have four pops at it from the 9-yard line with what we thought is a very firepower-driven offense was really unfortunate, of course. I get that. I told Howie Roseman, I said, Howie, when you guys when you had Julio out there on that last play and you guys were able to succeed in there, I just knew that you guys, it was just one of those seasons, and we've all been around them, right?
Right.
Where this was your season. Things were just falling into place. That's not taking anything away from them. They had a hell of a season. I'm just saying we had times during our Super Bowl run, albeit coming up short, where, you know, the balls would bounce a little bit more in your favor. And
right.
Things, again, literally and figuratively speaking, they would. And, man, they went and did their thing, and really happy for him and that organization. Of course, Doug did a heck of a job.
Yeah, and I know Doug so well from Green Bay. You know, he was the guy. I'll tell you, Thomas, I tried to get a good backup quarterback every year, some veteran, and they're like, I'm not coming there because Brett never gets hurt. You know, I want to play at some point. And I'm like, all right, all right, all right. And then come April, I'd call Doug Peterson, like, you want to come back? He's like, sure. We do a contract in about 30 seconds. All right, here he is again. So what a special guy. And you talk about no ego, and that, and you could see that team reflect that. So resilient, so selfless.
It was so selfless. And it was, again, those are the guys you cheer for, right? And that's why I really, I'm cheering for Q because Q has such a bond with our team and such an authentic bond. And those are the guys you want to, you know, win many, right? That's what you want.
Well, congrats so much on this Ryan deal. You've got your face of the franchise locked up for 6 years now. Really great to see that and the continued success of the Falcons. And I always enjoy talking to you. Now, Thomas, you are now a repeat offender in this podcast, so you're going to be a regular now.
I'm ready. You just call me whenever you need me.
You got it. Thanks so much.
Thank you, my friend. We'll talk soon.
Thanks for listening to The Business of Sports with Andrew Brand. Make sure to subscribe to this podcast so you never miss an episode. You can also get additional insider insight by listening to the Ross Tucker Football Podcast, Fantasy Feast, Even Money, and College Draft Podcast, all at rostucker.com or wherever podcasts are found.